is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it.
Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks.
Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone.
Boy, cuts to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hello there. Welcome to the show, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy and Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive on Latte Monday.
Right.
Yeah, we got new Tim Hortons lattes. They're promoting their amazing deal, handcrafted latte starting at $2.29. And you got a freebie there, Donald. How was it?
I got a freebie.
I didn't think you were a coffee guy.
You know, I'm not a coffee guy, so I'm giving this whole thing a try, you know, and it's all right. It's all right.
Good.
I had to put some extra stuff in there to sweeten it a little bit, but it's all right.
Well, I got vanilla latte in mine, so I'm pretty happy with it. Okay. We'll talk about lattes today, as we'll do just about anything to avoid talking about yesterday's game. Now, we got to talk about yesterday's game. We should talk about yesterday's game, and there's a lot to talk about regarding yesterday's game. We want to hear from you as well. The phone line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Good show today. Two-hour show today. That's all. That's all we can stand. No, it's hockey coming up today. 3 o'clock matinee game for the Buffalo Sabres in New Jersey down at the arena downtown, KeyBank Center, right?
Yeah.
3 o'clock faceoff. We're going to book out of here at 2 o'clock to let them go ahead and do the pregame show for the Buffalo Sabres game coming up at 3 o'clock. So, two-hour show and a lot to cram into these 2 hours. Moments away, Sharice Wright, who played a pretty good game on what was a pretty good defensive effort for the Buffalo Bills yesterday. Sharice Wright pressed into service because of the injuries and actually had to make a position change as the thing went along too, right? He had to move inside and be the nickel corner. Wright finished the game with 11 combined tackles and 2 passes defensed. Pretty good game for Sharice Wright. He'll be joining us in studio just a couple of minutes. Bottom of this hour, Chris Brown, Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com. Chris will be joining us in studio. Sean McDermott meets the media at 1 o'clock today, and that'll be carried live here on our show. Some injury updates to deal with. We'll hear from Sean at 1 o'clock. We've got a lot of stuff going on around the National Football League that we're going to have to address, so that's coming up today on the show. And, of course, we'll have game rewind some of the highlights from yesterday, take a trip around the locker room, hear what they were saying in the locker room yesterday. And they were registering mostly, Donald, disappointment in that Buffalo locker room. When you think of the opportunity that was handed the Bills yesterday to go to 4-1, go into the bye, to beat a conference opponent on the road, to go up against a 1-3 conference opponent. I know the Bengals' defense is pretty good, but the game was there to be won. The opportunities were there. We kept talking last week about how many times are they going to have a turnover margin. They had it again yesterday, +2 mm-hmm. in takeaway turnover. They had things gift-wrapped for them, tip passes right to them. They got a 40-yard punt return. They had both the Cincinnati starting cornerbacks out of the game in the first half, and all they could muster was one touchdown, 16 points. Ridiculous, really, really.
You know, last week I talked about you have to finish drives. You know, you have to, first of all, sustain long drives, but then you have to finish those drives. You have to end up with touchdowns and not field goals, and they weren't able to do that. And like you said, you had so many opportunities. And this is what happens. When you don't get – and I don't think this team is going to get blown out. Like, I don't think there's going to be a game where they truly get blown out because they have a good defense. Now, you have some injuries, but I still think they have a good defense. The system, the scheme, everything is working, and they are able to hold teams to marginal points. Because of that, they're always going to be in these games. When you end up losing, what's going to happen is at the end of the season, regardless if you have a good record, if you're 500, if you have a losing record, once the end of the season comes around, you're going to look back on these games.
Yeah.
And you're going to say, man, think about the opportunities they had in the Jets game. Or not the Jets, the Panthers game. Think about the opportunities you had in the Bengals game. You know, and this is what happens. You have so many opportunities to actually beat a team on the road, steal a win, an AFC conference opponent to steal a win. You know, and you're not able to do that. It comes back to haunt you at the end of the season.
It sure will. You would think it will. And it certainly exposed many of the issues and problems that they're going to have to deal with in the two-thirds of the season that remain. And that's an important point, too, I think. The fact that 5 games in, 11 games left. That's essentially two-thirds of the season, a little bit more than two-thirds of the season still left to play. There are twists and turns out there that we don't know about in terms of injuries and people getting better, maybe people not getting better. There are all kinds of issues that still lie out there, but the season is still there very much in front of them, and that is, I think, the good takeaway from yesterday's game, that, yes, they are capable of playing poorly offensively as they did yesterday, but, yes, there is time to fix what ails them. I don't know if there's a quick fix coming in terms of an addition to the roster at the wide receiving ranks, but there is time to fix what ails them and certainly winnable games down the stretch. We said this last week about, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago after the Denver win, and even a little bit last week when people were giddy after they went on the road and beat Atlanta. Mm-hmm. How much did your expectation level change for the Bills after those two wins? And I was pretty adamant about this, Donald. My expectation level in terms of what this season would look like did not change that much after they beat the Broncos or after they won in Atlanta. And after this loss yesterday, I still have pretty much the same expectations. I think this team is going to finish somewhere between 7 and 9 wins. Apparently, and I think it's pretty evident, they have a very strong defense that does a great job of keeping people out of the end zone. They get takeaways, timely takeaways on defense, and it's an offense that struggles for a variety of reasons, including quarterback play, including lack of weapons outside, and now a running game that hasn't been up to snuff for almost a month now. So all of that, I think, is going to add up to a season that's going to be between 7 and 9 wins, just as I thought it was going to be when the season started, just as I thought it was going to be a week ago today after they won in Atlanta.
You know, in terms of this offense, I didn't expect this from this offense. Like, I expected this offense now, we're 5 games into the season, to be strong running the ball, but still be trying to find itself really getting into gelling now with the receivers and Tyrod Taylor. But right now, this offense is not able to really do anything. It's not able to run the ball, and when you can't run the ball, you can't pass the ball, or vice versa. You know, they can't pass the ball, so they're not able to run the ball. You know, so they can't get anything done on offense. This is not really what I expected from this offense, a team that had the number one rushing attack the last 2 years in a row.
So where does that leave us? It leaves us with a lot to talk about today and throughout the course of the week and really the next 2 weeks as we get set for the bye. And you're welcome to join us. The phone line's open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We couldn't really narrow it down to a Twitter poll today, so we just put up on Twitter, what do you take away from yesterday's loss to the Bengals? And you can weigh in with us via Twitter or on the telephone lines at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Let's get to some calls. Let's go to Rick in Denver. Hello, Rick. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. I think a majority of the fan frustration is that the AFC is there for the taking, including the division, and we're so close. You know, if we could just get an offensive threat, you know, especially at wide receiver, that would make all the difference. And the thing is that I don't think Coach McDermott can say that he has full confidence in Tyrod and full confidence in the wide receivers because it's not getting done. So one or the other is the problem. And so if the receivers are getting open, and I can't wait till the All-22 comes out, and Tyrod's not pulling the trigger, then he's the problem. If they're being blanketed by the second-team cornerbacks of the Cincinnati Bengals, then, yeah, we definitely have a receiver problem. And if we have any chance of going to the playoffs or making any noise, we have got to get, you know, a threat. And that probably means that we need to make a trade of some sort because I don't think there's anybody out there that's available in, you know, on the market, free agency or whatever. So, I don't know. I just like to hear what your guys' comments is. I just don't think you can say both.
I think you can say both, by the way, Rick. In fact, let me start with that. I do think it's a combination of lack of receiving threats and guys are not getting open often, but certainly Tyrod misses open receivers. He did it again yesterday. And more than missing him, I think he is reluctant. You might see him. He's reluctant, apparently, to pull the trigger, which is, you know, there were a couple times I made my notes after watching the game, the video today. One of my notes just said, pull the trigger. Actually, two of them said, pull the trigger. Yeah. But here's the other thing. What would you do to solve those problems? You know, the quarterback problem, if you think. Are you ready to make that switch? I'm not. Or what would you do? You mentioned about trading for a receiver. How much are you willing to give up to trade for a receiver? Answer those questions for me, if you would, Rick.
Yeah, well, that's the million-dollar question. I'm not Brandon Bean. I don't know what it's going to take with some of these teams that, you know, like, you know, San Diego maybe. I mean, they've got a few wide receivers there and some other teams. I don't know.
Can I just say this? Because I thought, obviously, like most people, about the solutions to the receiver issue with Jordan Matthews still out. If you're going to trade, you're going to get, you know, likely get a guy like Kalen Clay, who they traded for it on cutdown day. You know what I mean? That's the kind of receiver you would get. At least that's the caliber of receiver, maybe not that particular type. That's the only kind of receiver that's going to be available for trade, sort of a developmental guy, I would think, right? Unless you're willing to give up premium draft picks, which I wouldn't.
Well, I'll shoot straight with you. My feeling is that, you know, I would like to see what Peterman can do. I mean, I know Tyrod, it's like every week he does just enough to get all of us to buy into him, and then he pulls a game like he did yesterday, and you're like, and it seems like it's continuous all the time. So, you know what? What do we got to lose? You got 2 weeks here. I know they're not going to do it, but I would love to see what this kid could do, especially with how the rest of the quarterbacks are performing from last year's draft class. I think he's got the ability to do just that, pull the trigger if the receivers are open, because I think it's more Tyrod not pulling the trigger than it is us not having receivers open.
What do you think, Donald?
Well, two things. So the first thing with the whole trade, that's not really something that I would expect, just because this coach – Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean have both talked about how you build a team, you know, and not trying to collect talent, but to try to truly build a team. And they truly believe that you build your team through the draft. And so I wouldn't expect a trade because I don't think they want to give up any draft capital. I just don't see that happening right now this season. I don't think they want to give up early premium picks, and I truly don't think that they want to give up late picks either because they feel like they can get some value in later rounds in the draft, you know. And so I would not expect a trade. In terms of changing quarterbacks right now, look, I feel how a lot of people feel. It's frustrating when you watch the offense not be able to get the ball down the field. It's frustrating when you watch this passing game and when you actually can see the all-22 and sometimes you see guys open and you know, maybe not pulling the trigger. I think the one play that sticks out to me in yesterday's game, which is so evident of that, was the last drive, and we talked about this, the last drive of the game where Tyrod got sacked and Kalen Clay actually came open on a max protection play that was actually designed to go to Kalen Clay, you know, and Tyrod held the ball and got sacked. But I still don't think right now at 3-2 that you make a switch at your quarterback. I just don't see that happening right now.
No, me neither. I think it's early, but I understand why people might feel that way. Tom in West Seneca. Tom, welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi, John. Hi, Don. Thanks
Hi.
For having me on.
Sure.
I had a comment about the defense yesterday. I thought they were great. They held a good team like the Bengals to 20 points, 100%. I'm pleased. I have a second thoughts now. I know you. I think you guys will disagree with me that the quarterback situation. I think Tyrod Taylor is phenomenal. He's a phenomenal athlete. Strong arm. Good running ability, agility, the whole nine yards. The one weakness about Tyrod Taylor that I've seen from last year and extending right into this year is his accuracy. And, of course, you guys pointed out pulling the trigger at the right time. But his accuracy does not seem that good. And I think that, in my opinion right now, I don't think that as much as I like the guy, he has all this great ability. I don't think he's a right fit for the Bills as quarterback. And we haven't had a really great quarterback with accuracy since Jim Kelly and Doug Flutie. And that's pretty much it, guys. I know you won't agree with me on everything.
No, I won't agree on everything. But I don't know what the solution is at this point. I do think Tyrod right now, even today, presents them the best opportunity to win games. Now, that what might change as the season goes along, but – right now, I think he gives them the best opportunity to win games, which is what it should be about right now.
Yeah, right now, that is what it's about. It's about winning games, and I think, you know, Tyrod is the best guy for the job right now. In the position that you are in right now, you just have to hope that you can get certain things corrected, you know. And now I will say this about Tyrod. You don't have your number one wide receiver, all right, and that's Jordan Matthews. Now, you don't have a true, like, number one, league number one wide receiver like a Sammy Watkins. You don't have that anymore, all right? You have Jordan Matthews as your number one. He's not here right now. He's not playing right now. You have Zay Jones. You have Brandon Tate. You have other guys, Andre Holmes, that are on the field with you. You have to throw the ball. Like, you have to, and I understand that Tyrod and quarterbacks work on a whole trust factor and all of that stuff, but he has to throw the ball. Like, he has to let it loose and just let those guys make plays, you know? And if they're dropping passes, at least – you know, we can see that, but he has to get these guys the ball and let them make plays if this offense wants to get anything going, because the running game will not get going. These teams do not – they do not respect the passing game, and so they're going to continue to just stack the box, eight in the box every single time. And LeSean McCoy is not going to be able to get going because you have so many guys that he has to run against. So Tyrod has to throw this offense out of that. He has to ease these defenses, back these defenses off. Now you're at a point where teams won't even rush Tyrod the same way. They're not going to. Now, you had six sacks yesterday, but they're not going to rush him the same way and guys just trying to pin their ears back and get up the field and get Tyrod Taylor because they know he can get out and scramble. So now the defensive line is going to sit. You know, they're going to rush, but they're going to make sure they keep him in the pocket. You know, and that's the biggest thing. Keep him in the pocket. Force him to throw the ball. And so now he's in a situation where he has to throw the ball. You know, you have to throw it to guys. Who knows what's going to happen with Charles Clay? We'll hear about that later. But you're not even going to have your number one guy that you actually trust to get the ball to. So you have no choice but to throw it to everybody.
Here's a call from Nick in Los Angeles. Hello, Nick. Welcome.
Hi. Hope you guys are having a good day.
Yes, I am.
Think that Mr. Dennison might need to go. I mean, he took the part of the team that wasn't broken and broke it with his zone blocking scheme. We were first in running for 2 years in a row, top 10 in scoring for 2 years, and one of those years we had no right wide receivers. We were bringing in wide receivers every week because our whole wide receiver core was injured. So he just broke the offense. And with his zone blocking scheme, and, you know.
No, I think that's overstated, Nick. I don't think anybody needs to go, by the way. I think five games in, it's foolish to talk like that. I think you need time to see how this plays out. The Bills are 3-2. Standing board, whatever it's worth, the standing board has them, you know, very much in the playoff picture, and we'll see how that plays out. But clearly there's been, a break-in period that hasn't worked well for this Buffalo offense, right? And the running game is a problem. I think the offensive line has something to do with that. I think, as Donald pointed out a minute ago, the lack of a passing threat has meant that teams are playing them a little bit differently. So there's a lot that goes into it, Donald. I don't think anybody needs to go. I'm not quite sure what.
Yeah, I don't see that happening right now. I don't think anyone needs to go right now. I don't think Coach Rick Dennison needs to go right now. I mean, you know, he's been dealt a tough hand as well, you know, and having to figure out different ways to make this offense go. I think in terms of the running game, they have shown that they are flexible, and, you know, and they are still going to run some of the zone, but they also can run some power game. You know, they've shown to be flexible in that. They've shown to be flexible in just how creative he wants to be with this offense in general, you know, and so I don't think that he needs to go right now, no.
We're going to take a listen to what they were saying in the locker room yesterday. We spent some time in the locker room at Paul Brown Stadium yesterday, so let's listen into what they were saying. Around the Locker Room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. Linebacker Lorenzo Alexander going into the bye week off a loss.
We learn from it. That's the only way we can grow and continue to get better. It's still early in the season. We can't allow this to really shift. You know, going high to low is never a good thing. So we did some good things out there and just want to kind of build off those and learn from the things that we didn't do so well. We got a lot of football left. So continue to defend home and figure out how to win a couple of these games on the road and we'll be fine.
Head coach Sean McDermott, you have to be able to take advantage of the takeaways.
You want to take advantage of those opportunities. That's what taking the ball away is for. And usually when you take the ball away, at that point, you said 3-0. You know, you feel like you're in pretty good shape. And so, you know, we got to go back, look at the film, evaluate what we did well, evaluate what we didn't do well, and also evaluate fundamentals. Again, a lot to learn from this game, and we've got to use it as we continue to grow and build with our football team.
Defensive end Jerry Hughes, if you get three takeaways, you should probably win.
I think when we really look back on things, there's certainly ways that we can improve. On defense, just getting off the field on third down for one, just to kind of give our offense a shorter field so they don't have to push the whole length of the field. I felt like we could have been a lot better job in that. But other than that, I mean, we just got to keep working and just keep chipping away.
Linebacker Preston Brown on trying to cover A.J. Green.
He had too many long passes. I mean, it is what it is. He did a great job, and Andy found him down the sideline for a lot of plays. But like I said, we got to find ways to be over top or do whatever we got to do to take him away. But they did a great job game planning us.
Quarterback Tyrod Taylor, the Bengals get six sacks.
We knew their front seven front four for sure. We're definitely good at rushing the passer. It's my job to get the ball out quicker. But like you said, I mean, we got to also be able to create downfield. There were some times when we did, just wasn't on the same page and didn't connect. Moving forward, we have to learn from that. I have to learn from it and get better. Take this bye week to regroup and come back and open up strong at home.
Running back LeSean McCoy on his recent struggles.
Nobody grades and judges my game like myself, you know. So I'm angry about it, but at the end of the day, we're 3-2, you know. We're in a good situation. It'd have been a lot better if we won this game. Just got to keep plugging at it, you know. Some of it's like respect, you know. Certain routes, bracketing, different coverages I'm getting as a back, you know, in the running game. All the attention's on the running game, so as much as I want to be angry, you know, you just got to adjust to it and figure out a way to beat it. But we'll get there. You know, the last 2 years we've been running, so after this bye week, this is hopefully we get it going. I think today would have been a great day to kind of get over that hump. You know, we're right there.
Around the Locker Room, presented by NOCO, at work, at home, and on the go. John Murphy, Donald Jones joins in studio by a guy who led the team in tackles yesterday, cornerback Sharice Wright. How often have you done that throughout your 7-year NFL career?
A lot.
Have you?
Yeah, that's one thing that I have done a lot is tackle.
Yeah.
I think the first game last year against Buffalo, I had like 10 or 11 tackles.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So it's the second time I had that many tackles.
And you, I mean, they down in Baltimore, they like that type of corner, guys that right. tackle. Seems like Ozzy. So you, it was no shock when they actually brought you here because you are that type of guy. And Coach McDermott likes corners that can tackle.
Right. So it works. Works for the defense. Yeah. Yeah, so
did you, based on the way the practice week was going last week, you probably went into that game, I would think, figuring you were going to play, maybe start even with EJ kind of on the questionable list all week last week.
Huh? Right.
So tell me about what that felt like getting the start and being out there early in the game at least.
I mean, it felt good just to, you know what I mean, just to get some playing time and get out there and just be a part of the defense that I've been playing so well all season. And you hate to see guys go down, but, you know, we preached the next guy up, and the opportunity was there for me to, you know, step up. I'm the next guy up in line, and I know my role on this team, and I'm just, you know, just trying to do the best I can.
When you're not in the game playing on defense for the first 4 weeks and then you have to step up, and I know – you know, you have the mentality. We all, as players, have a mentality of, look, when my opportunity comes, I got to make the best of it. But how hard is it to jump in and actually have to make plays when you haven't done that yet this year, really?
Oh, man, it's hard. It's like, for me, it's my first game that mm-hmm. I, like, played since, I want to say, December last season. The first game I actually played every snap on defense. So, you know, it's just catching up and just trying to get in that rhythm and get used to playing a full game. It's a lot that comes through it. And I'll tell you, it's a lot different than going in the fourth quarter of a game against the Atlanta Falcons. With, you know what I mean? You've been on the sideline the whole game and you just get thrown in the fire. So, I mean, I've been having little things like that happen to kind of just get me prepared and just keep my mind right.
And then the game goes along and Leonard Johnson gets hurt and all of a sudden you have to play the nickel corner spot. Were you comfortable there? Have you had much –
I mean, the great thing about it is just they always just talk to us about learning, try to learn the whole defense, right. Learn the whole scheme of the defense. We're a traveling corner team. So, I mean, sometimes we are in a slot at corner. So it's some familiarity there, but it's little things, it's the blitzing and, you know, certain things like that. But I don't think I had any MEs after not having any reps at nickel
That's
at all.
Good.
So,
yeah.
I mean.
Come out again with no MEs, you're like, whew.
Yeah.
A.J. Green, you went up against him. Tre'Davious went up against him. Somebody, one of the guys in the locker room yesterday said something to me, and he just said he's a beast. I mean, he really is, isn't he? He's just got to be impossible
I
to
mean,
cover.
Yeah, you face I mean, him. He, yeah, I faced him plenty of times. And he's a good receiver. He's good at what he does. And you know, we just, you know, we can't allow him to be that against us, though. You know, we give guys credit where it's due, but we take pride in what we do also as a defense. And we feel like we're one of the best secondaries in the league, and we want to play like that every week. And, you know, you take away two plays that he had, it's a whole different day.
That's what I mean. It wasn't as if he torched you all day, but he made two big plays that both of them were pretty meaningful in the game.
And those two big plays, you know, that was – over 100 yards on two plays. You take those other plays away. I mean, I think three turnovers came off balls thrown to him during the game. You know, you look at things like that. And Tre'Davious played well on him other than those plays.
Right.
He played well other plays on him. So, I mean, just things like that you just don't want to allow to happen on defense. And it can really change the game.
Sharice, thanks for coming in here. I know you got meetings to go to. We appreciate you stopping by. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sharice Wright, Bill's Corner, joining us in studio. Donald and I back with more in a moment. Chris Brown's going to join us. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Here we go, third and 10 from the 12. The snap, Taylor looks, fires into the end zone, got a man, caught. Touchdown, Brandon Tate, touchdown Buffalo.
Waiting for the side judge to decide it's a touchdown. That's the Hilbert College call of the game. At Hilbert, the community, the feeling, the values are different. See Hilbert College, see differently. Go to hilbert.edu/see different. Get a different look at the game right now from our man Chris Brown, Bills Insider, BuffaloBills.com, joining us in studio for the next several minutes. You're welcome to join us as well, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Chris, we've already fielded a couple of calls about Tyrod Taylor. Did not play well yesterday. I get that, but people looking for major upheavals. I will say this. It's important to note that now he's into basically his third season as a starter with the Bills. He started 34 games, and this year, he's completed 63% of his passes. For his career, he's completed 62. He's got a 3-to-1 edge, touchdowns and interceptions throughout his career. And so far this year, he's pretty much playing, at least on paper, the way that he played. I think my point is, not that he played well, he didn't. But we're seeing Tyrod Taylor, the ups and the downs, kind of even it out as he moves into his third year as a starter. I think some good moments against Atlanta and Denver, maybe more against Denver, and then some rough moments yesterday. And this is what you're getting consistently from Tyrod Taylor.
I don't think what we saw yesterday is anything different from what we have seen the last 2 years. I would agree with you.
Okay.
I would say if there is one thing that he didn't do yesterday that disappointed me, it was take off and run a few times. He had one carry for 3 yards, I think, in the game. Usually it's 6, 7, 8 rushes, you know, whether it's designed or whether he's just escaping because there's nobody available and he's got to try to make some yards. And if you compare last week's game to this week's game, you know, he converts a 3rd and 5 last week to keep a drive alive. He converts a 3rd and 3 by taking off and running to keep a drive alive. I thought he almost put too much faith in the receiving core that, well, somebody's going to come open here, and I'm going to hang in the pocket an extra second and a half. And I think it really kind of hamstrung the offense, maybe even more than it has been. So if there's one knock I'm putting on Tyrod yesterday, I would have liked to see him take off and run a couple more times yesterday.
Right.
I'm not saying 10 times, but probably four or five times. I thought there were opportunities where he could get at least a few yards running the ball and keep them in manageable down and distance situation. There were too many times where they were in bad down and distance.
I don't disagree with that, but to me, the bigger issue with him was just not pulling the trigger, just not, you know, firing it downfield into tiny little windows. He did in the
touchdown
play we just
pass.
Saw, the Brandon Tate touchdown pass.
Yeah.
Do that more often, more consistently.
Well, yeah, but that's not what he does. He doesn't do that. If you're going to talk about he's doing a lot of the same things he's done each of the last 2 years, well, then you can't expect him to be throwing it into tight windows and giving receivers the chance to make a play. He doesn't do that. He's never done that. So to now expect, you know, a leopard to change his spots is just, I think it's unrealistic. You know, we can talk about how much of a focus Coach Dennison was putting on him in terms of his internal clock and, you know, release time and all of that. I think that has gone away. If you want to make an argument about that, I'll talk about that because I think that was a problem yesterday. So you're saying, well, it's maybe the same thing. I don't know if it is, only because I just think he's a guy that is risk averse, I think, by nature as a quarterback. And I don't know if you can coach it out of him. I don't think you can. We're going on 3 years here now where we haven't seen him increase his rate of risk with throwing the football. So I don't get the sense that it's going to change anytime soon, especially with a group of receivers that he probably trusts less than any other group he's had in his time here.
Now, as you talk about him not running or taking off and running as much, we know that is what he does. That's the best part of his game. you know, he can take off and he can run and pick up first downs, sometimes even take it to the house. Do you feel like this year in his mind, or maybe even something that the coaches are telling him as we talk about the eternal clock and all of that stuff, he's trying to make more of an emphasis to stay in the pocket himself and become a pocket passer?
Well, I mean, there's probably part of that battle that he wages with himself each and every week. I think he wants to be respected as a pocket passer first and foremost, but I think at the same time he recognizes that if he can keep a drive alive based on his mobility and his skill with his legs, it probably best serves him to do that because that's what's going to best help the team stay on the field on offense and extend drives. So I'm not going to say it's an easy balance to strike, especially when you got, you know, 270-pound men running after you trying to take your head off. But at the same time, you know, I think he's had enough time on the field here in two-plus years to make those decisions in the flow of a game and say, you know, we're not doing anything here in the passing game. If I don't see it, I got to at least get us some yards so we can keep – so we can live for another play and move the sticks and live for three more plays there. And I think that's the balance that – proves to be difficult for him to strike sometimes, and it could be based on a number of things, based on the input he's getting from the offensive coaches, based on what he's seeing out there on the field, based on who he has at his disposal in the passing game. All of these things factor in to the decisions he makes in a game on any given play.
You know, it was a factor yesterday, injuries, obviously. The Bills' chances were hurt by not having E.J. Gaines available. And then losing Leonard Johnson to the hamstring in the middle of the game or first half of the game, not having Jordan Matthews, losing Charles Clay in the middle of the game. And as much as you'd like to point to that, and it was a factor, the Bengals can say, well, we lost both our starting cornerbacks.
Right.
You know?
No, I think that's fair. I think what we all have to remember here is you have to assess Tyrod for who he is. Tyrod is a quarterback that is not going to lose the game for you. He's not going to kill you. Not going to turn it over a lot, and is capable of helping you with his legs to keep you in manageable down and distance. Has a great arm, but can be inconsistent at times. There was a series yesterday. He throws high, he throws short, and he throws high again. Three straight incompletions with targets that were there to make plays, and no completions on any of them. So, you know, I think what we have here is a quarterback who busts his hump every single week, but in the end, at best, is probably a 64% completion guy, probably a 225-yard-a-game guy, probably a passing touchdown and a rushing touchdown-a-game guy, and probably going to be somewhere in the low 90s in passer rating. That's who he is. And if you expect more, you're foolish. You should not expect more.
Yeah.
What I think the bigger issue here, the issue on offense is bigger than Tyrod. It's the run game.
Yeah.
The run game has completely disappeared. That was the identity of this offense the past 2 years. It's gone. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it went, but they better find it. Because if they don't have that, Tyrod can't do what he does. Because if you want, because here's the thing. This is a run-first offense. Has been for the last 2 years. And based on the percentage of run-to-pass calls, it's still is in the minds of the offensive coaches.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, they better fix that. Fix that. Because if you don't fix that, none of the other stuff falls into place, including the play of your quarterback. So everybody can talk till you're blue in the face about Tyrod and how he's playing. The bigger issue here is the run game. It needs to get fixed or they're not going to do anything on offense. And proof of that is the fourth quarter, okay? You're in the fourth quarter. You're in a one-score game. You run 12 plays, you get 2 net yards, and your average drive start in the fourth quarter is your own 46-yard line. 2 net yards on 12 plays. That's embarrassing.
Yeah.
That's bad. That's not even that's not NFL level in any way, shape, or form. It's just not.
36 yards of offense in the entire second half. That's not.
I mean, you can't get the ball on the 12-yard line and not get in the end zone.
Yeah.
Especially with where this – you should run it 4 times and get in the end zone. I mean, especially with the guys that you have on this offensive line, the running back you have in the backfield. Cincinnati, I know, they're a good run defense, came into the game number 3 in the league. But if you're worth your salt, on the 12-yard line in a one-score game, run it 4 times. You should get in. if you're this offense as it was the past 2 years. And that was the most glaring example to me. This is not the same run game. It's not the same run game. Got the same talented running back there, but this run game is not where it has been the past 2 years. And it's got it. That's the biggest thing that has to get fixed in this bye week.
Let's take a call for Chris Brown while he's here. Perry calling from Buffalo. Go ahead, Perry. You're on the air with us.
Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me?
We sure can.
Sure can. Oh, man, I love the show. Thank you for having me. Chris Brown just said it the best. We don't have that switch-up running back when we had Gillislee. And it shows. I love Mike Tolbert, great professional, but he's got that switch-up hitter that we need. And my one question is, how do we get Brandon Riley up with the starters? Can we still make that happen? Or is it just he's on the practice squad for the whole year? Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you got a whole bunch of things there. I don't think the run game problem is tied to who you have as your number two back.
Nope.
You know, you can make the argument on what's better to have, you know, a downhill plugger like Tolbert, Jonathan Williams, Mike Gillislee. Mm-hmm. You know, you can argue that, you know, as long as you want. I don't think that's the most pressing issue with the run game. The most pressing issue is the blocking scheme and the five men up front. No matter what combination of guys you want up there, it's not getting executed with consistency as a five-man unit gelling with the zone blocking scheme. They've tried to kind of mix and match and use some of the blocking schemes from last year with the inside zone game. It's had limited success. So now you're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. You have to decide what you are, and they've got to do it this week. This is the week to do it in the bye week. Decide we're going to still mix and match. Decide who our five are.
Yeah, well, I was just going to
say. That's the other thing. And then get it figured out because nothing else is going to work on offense if they don't get the run game fixed.
It's not the same offensive line that helped lead the league in rushing the last two
years.
That's
right.
I mean, you've DuCasse had now and with Deion Dawkins.
I mean, we've talked about coming into the season, okay, you have your starters back. You have your starters back. But now you've had guys in and out of the lineup.
Yeah.
You know, even when Cordy Glenn was up, you're still going up and down with him and Deion. This week you had DuCasse. And anytime you're talking about offense in general, you need your offensive line to gel together. You need those guys on the field. And if you're learning a new scheme, something that they haven't done for the past 2 years and which led them to the number one rushing attack, you don't have everybody on the field together, gelling together, it's just not going to work.
The thing that you can argue this as much as you want also, when you have a new system that's going in, usually the thing is not going to operate like a well-oiled machine until mid-October, late October. It's just not going to be humming along really well until then. That's how long it takes to get a vast – I mean, it's a completely different blocking scheme. Just talking to these guys in the locker room, it's completely different from what they've done the last 2 years. So it's going to take time for five men to execute it effectively as a unit. So you already have a change due to circumstance – at left tackle with Cordy Glenn. Foot, ankle, can't stay in the lineup, unhealthy. Okay, you have to put the rookie in there. Fine. You don't have a choice. That's what you have to do. The choice to go with DuCasse at right guard yesterday, I understand you're trying to look for the right combinations, this, that, and the other, but if you're trying to allow this new blocking scheme, you're trying to let the line gain a foothold in executing this blocking scheme on a consistent basis where they can start to gain traction, get yards, keep the team in manageable down and distance. I think you want to try to keep the same guys on the field as much as possible. Mm-hmm. You put another change into the mix, and now there's another adjustment that has to take place. And I think it just makes it harder for the line to act as a unit when there's a new guy in there. It might not sound like a big deal, but you talk to the players, you need reps together.
Yeah. Yep.
And if you compromise that by pulling somebody out just to try a different combination – I don't know. It didn't seem to prove effective yesterday.
And it's not easy because in a zone scheme, you're blocking a zone. Like, you're all working together in unison, moving one way, and you're actually blocking a zone. You have to move up to the next level and get a certain guy. You have to work off of each other in terms of double team up to the next level, get a linebacker. And it's not easy to do when you're not working with the same guys every single week.
Chris, you got to run, right? You got to go over to Sean McDermott, right?
Yep, 1 o'clock news conference. Coach's update here. I'm not – it's a bye week. You know, they don't have to give a game status or injury report on anybody. So I'm not anticipating anything being unearthed to any great extent on Charles Clay or Leonard Johnson other than their injuries are what they are. I'm not anticipating a timetable here, just because they don't have to give one,
right.
really. And
right.
why would you? Why would all you right, give right. competitive advantage to Tampa Bay if they know what your situation is a week and a half before you got to play them?
All right. Make sure you keep plugged into Chris at BuffaloBills.com for information on that and everything else. We're going to take a break here. And, Bills fans, your vote counts this season for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. It is powered by Blue Rock Energy, the official electricity supplier of the Buffalo Bills. The nominees for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week: kicker Steven Hauschka, wide receiver punt return specialist Brandon Tate, safety Jordan Poyer with an interception, safety Micah Hyde with an interception. You can vote right now at BlueRockEnergy.com/POTW or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to learn more. The Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week, powered by Blue Rock Energy. Donald and I back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Andy Dalton takes the shotgun snap, fakes the handoff, sets up the throw, fires down the middle. This one is caught by A.J. Green at the Buffalo 25, and the ball comes out, and it is scooped up by Poyer at the Buffalo 10. Cuts to his right at the 20, down the far sideline at the 35. Poyer on the run, and he finally goes out of bounds at the 47-yard line. A.J. Green caught it, and the ball popped out. Yeah, the Bengals were on their way into the red zone if Lorenzo Alexander didn't shake the ball loose. The Hunt Real Estate Red Zone. Visit huntrealestate.com to score on all of your real estate needs. Another example of a takeaway that Bills had to settle for a field goal. Just difficult to watch, Donald. All those opportunities being presented, the Buffalo offense and the inability to cash in just absolutely wiped out their chances yesterday.
Yes, it's tough to watch when you actually get so many opportunities and you get great field position. I mean, we always talk about field position in a game and how important it is. In the Panthers game, the Bills had horrible field position the entire game.
Yep.
This game, they didn't. They had a lot better field position. They had so many opportunities. Time of possession was like even. It was like the Bengals had the ball 30 minutes. The Bills had the ball 29-plus minutes. So it was right there even, and the Bills just couldn't get it done.
Let's take a phone call from Paul in Amherst. Hello, Paul. Welcome. You're on the show.
Hi, guys. I just want to go back to last year when Rex Ryan, or 2 years ago when Rex Ryan took over the team, and he changed their defense, something that was working, and you saw what happened with that the last 2 years. But I want to equate that to the offense this year. The way the offensive run game, I think, the reason it's being hindered is nobody's keying on Tyrod Taylor. No one's looking at him. If you watch the game, when he gives the ball to LeSean McCoy, everybody's just firing there. There's no read option, and I think that was one of the reasons we had one of the best running games in the league last 2 years.
Read option, or?
Well, no, that with that read option, with the ability to have that to run that read option, you know, now you're taking maybe one guy away from the middle right. of the line, having to watch Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, clearly they got to do something better on offense. There's no question about that, Paul. And I think it's hard for me to. I mean, Chris Brown, Donald, a minute ago was talking about how they can't run the ball. But part of the reason I believe they can't run the ball is because, as Paul and Ambrose points out, you know, teams don't respect the Bills' passing game. And it all kind of works hand in hand. You got to get the passing game going so that things open up for the run, and vice versa. You know, you got to get the passing, you got to get the running game going so people respect that. You know, the Bills had a lot of success on play action in the two wins over Denver and Atlanta, and they ran it yesterday. A lot of first down play action, but it wasn't producing the results that it did in the previous two games.
Well, they don't respect the passing game. They also, when you think back to last year and the scheme that they had last year, just with Tyrod Taylor in the shotgun, handing the ball off, and more of read option type of stuff, and I think the caller was alluding to this a little bit as well. You had that threat of Tyrod can keep this ball and go out the other side,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so you had to pay attention to both. And so as long as he ran out his fakes, it will pull a linebacker out of that thing because they have to respect the fact Tyrod can run the other way. And so because of that, it gave – you know, LeSean McCoy a little extra room that actually is one less guy that he has to make miss, which could help out, you know. And Chris Brown was talking about this in the last segment. You know, this new scheme that they are trying, it is hard when you are subbing linemen in and out. You know, it's you are caught right now between a rock and a hard place because you you have this new scheme. You're trying to sprinkle in the old stuff, but then you're also subbing linemen in and out. And there's I don't know if we can expect it to get better when you're subbing offensive linemen in and out. That we talked with Ruben about this. Offensive linemen get on the track, and they get used to playing off of one each other, you know, yep. I mean, one another. And they don't have that right now because they're subbing guys in and out because of injury, and now because, you know, the right guard position, for whatever reason, they put Dukas in there, you know. And so they got to do something quickly and figure out, like Brownie said, what they want to do in the running game and who their starting five they want to be.
Maybe some answers coming up in just a minute or two when Sean McDermott meets the media. We will carry that news conference live coming up right after the top of the hour. And we got a lot more to come on this show. We're going to take a look around some of the news. There's incredible news from all over the National Football League, plus a look back at the game rewind from yesterday's game. And what did you take away from yesterday's loss in Cincinnati? Lines are open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Donald and I just wrapped up our taste of the new Tim Hortons latte made with freshly ground espresso and milk, precisely steamed. I had a vanilla. What'd you have, a plain?
Yeah.
Okay. Designed to have the right balance between espresso and milk.
You know, I don't drink coffee like that, so I don't know what it was. I couldn't tell you. Well, I think it was
a ringing endorsement.
I think it was plain, though. I think Jay told me it was plain.
$2.29, the lattes at Tim Hortons. Only at Tim Hortons restaurants in Buffalo and Staten Island. Price and participation may vary. Back with more, including Sean McDermott, when we come back. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back. John Murphy, Donald Jones at One Bills Drive, and Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott has just hit the podium across the way in the media room for his Monday 1 p.m. news conference. Let's listen in.
Five rookies on the field yesterday getting significant experience, and so whether they started or played, you know, that's important for our future, and as we continue to build, there's a silver lining in some of this, although I never want to see a guy get hurt in particular. Any player, let alone a player of Charles's caliber. So,
how would you assess that rookie class? I don't know if you want to go through them one by one, but you just mentioned that they're contributing heavily, you know, now through five games.
Well, I probably prefer just to go generally speaking at this point. Is really, you know, I would say great contributions early on. That said, much like our team, we're building, and you learn from. One game to the next, positives and negatives. And yesterday we had some of those moments where we've got to learn from those. I know, and so really, what I'm looking for is just to continue to grow from one game to the next. Just like our team, one game does not define who we are as a football team, win or lose. And so we have to continue to build, continue to put in the work, and grow. And that's what you do. You want to play, again, like I mentioned yesterday after the game, your best football in November and December.
So we saw Tyrod a lot, you know, going into that game, take off for runs when things break down. He's really done well with his feet. He didn't do that much yesterday. I think he only had one carry total for 3 yards, but really stood the pocket a lot. Was there something game plan-wise you guys saw that maybe was not conducive to allowing him to do that yesterday?
No, I just, you know, they did – some good things defensively. Give them credit. That's a good defense. You know, that said, there's some things we can do better offensively. And so we've got to work on that moving forward and, you know, to capitalize in particular on opportunities that we had field position. You take the ball away three times, you know, in the first three, four quarters there, the better half of the first three quarters, you set yourself up with valuable field position. And those have to be opportunities for us where we cash in and we didn't do a good job of that yesterday.
The fact that Charles had a scope, I mean, he didn't tear his ACL, or was it like full surgery?
I trust me when I'm telling you that I haven't even spoken with the docs yet. Other than I know that he had the scope, and we'll catch up at some point here in the next couple hours.
With LeSean McCoy yesterday said. And he was angry at himself or mad at himself, you know, based on what he was able to do in the run game. He also mentioned that you've had a lot of conversations with him about, you know, maybe not getting frustrated or to that effect. How do you prevent that from setting in for him? Because his production has not matched this year, what we've been accustomed to the last couple so far?
Right, every year is different. You know, those conversations really about that LaShawn has mentioned, it's just about, you know, really just a team, not so much with respect to the running game, but just as a team. And I think he's really – that's part of my relationship with LaShawn has been, okay, early on in his career I knew him. He knew me early on in my career. And to watch him evolve as a teammate is one of the joys of coaching or of being a coach. And separate conversations, and now it comes to the running game. And we've got to look at everything. And it's never just one thing. It's never just – the offensive line, never just the tight ends, never just the wide receivers, and some people, you know, the eight man box. It's all of that. It's everything that we can do better, and that's this week being our bye. It's about self awareness and evaluating what we've done well, what we haven't done well, and also looking to evolve. And that's the important part as we look at what's in front of us this week.
LaShawn specifically, I know you weren't here last year to see what he did, but when you evaluated last year's tape versus how you look at how he's performed this year, what do you see from him?
Well, I saw him have success last year, and I've seen him have success, similar success at times this year. The important part here is, you know, we've had untimely penalties that have cost us critical first downs as late as yesterday in the game. And then just getting on track in a rhythm with the running game so that he knows where the holes are. He knows where the blocks are, and that we're getting on those blocks and sustaining those blocks. And again, it goes. It's not just one position. It's multiple positions. All of us doing our job better.
John, why has it been so much tough sledding for him in running stretches to the outside? It seems like those are popping. Like maybe they were against the Jets, or certainly in the preseason as well.
Well, teams. See that, and they adjust. They do a good job of setting the edge, and at times yesterday we thought we had the edge, and we didn't make a key block that we needed, in particular on those outside runs. We started running the ball outside, and had success on the first drive on a run. We came back to in the second half, and we didn't make a block where we should have made the block. You want to go back, and that's what coaches do. That's why they call us coaches. We go back and we evaluate, we adapt, and we adjust. And that's what we have to do.
Might we see any changes along the offensive line now that you have some time to think about it and, you know, adjust and adapt it as you're talking about?
You know, we'll see. That's what part of this week is. We evaluate ourselves first, you know, and I've got to evaluate myself, and the coaches will all do that, and then we evaluate personnel, and we'll do that moving forward.
Given that he's your highest paid receiver, Andre Holmes only played in, I think, the fourth most snaps out of receivers yesterday, even with Jordan's injury. How do you square that in terms of the contract you gave him versus the role he's had so far?
How do we square that? I'm not sure what you're
getting
at.
Why did he only receive that many snaps, given that he's your highest paid receiver? You committed that sort of resource to him. But you have a game where you're missing a receiver. Andre's not really in the mix as much as some of the other guys.
Yeah, just rolling guys in and out based on game plan, based on the opponent. And also Andre's role on special teams. So that also plays a role in this also.
How much you've spent a lot of time this week evaluating and you know, self-critiquing, how big of a priority is to get this offense going, given how it's not gone for the past 4 weeks?
It's a big priority. It really is. It's a big priority. It's we've got to – that said, I can't – you don't just ignore the other two areas either. There's three phases to the game, and we have to continue to grow and get better in all three phases. And certainly there's areas, as late as yesterday with the offense, and like I mentioned, field position. You come out and you take advantage of those opportunities and in order to win a game, and we didn't do a good job of that yesterday. We have to improve in that area.
What is your – this has been an ongoing thing from before. Tyrod struggles when it comes to this team falling behind. He is 2-16 when the Bills fall behind by 4 points or more at any point in the game. What is that? What might that be a reflection of? And does it? How much of a concern is it that he can't seem to be capable of bringing this team back from just a 4-point deficit?
Well, you know, I don't know what necessarily happened before I got here. What I'm concerned about is where we are now and where we're going. And just like all of us, we have to continue to improve. Tyrod's working hard to continue to improve. I've got all the confidence in the world in Tyrod Taylor. And, you know, when you look at some of the things we've done in the Jets game, in the Denver game, and then also in the Atlanta game, you know, those are some things where you said, hey, that's up to the standard of performance that we're looking for. Obviously, yesterday wasn't. And that starts with me, and then it goes all the way down, that we've got to continue to grow and get better.
On the flip side, he did well in those three wins. In the two losses, he did have the ball in his hand on a final drive down by 6 points or less in each game and failed to deliver. That is also a measure of a quarterback, and what concerns you about that?
Well, the thing I love about that is the fact that, you know, we're in those games. We have a chance to win the game, and that's what I mentioned to our team this morning is, you know, we're currently right now in first place in the AFC East. Do we have a lot of room to grow and work to put in? We absolutely do. That said, let's continue with the momentum. Let's keep it going, and let's improve where we need to improve. And let's be honest with ourselves. You know, we all have to continue to improve. I want our players confident that when we get in those situations, we will prevail. And we've shown that. And I think one of the things we've done well early on at this point is we won games in the fourth quarter that haven't been won in the past. And I think that's a mindset, and that mindset continues to evolve and for the better at this point.
At the offensive line, right guard, left tackle, what do you guys in and out? And when you say, like, you want to make sure, you know, you want to see how things look, see how guys are progressing, there's still some competition. At some point, Coach, it's only week five, but at some point, do you feel like you have to kind of settle on maybe a group of five in order to get the most consistency that you want? And kind of, I know the competition's always got to be there, but at some point you feel like you kind of have to wedge that gap there and settle on a group of five?
Yeah, you know, you'd like to. You know, you'd like to be able to go out there and say, hey, we've got 22, 11 on offense, 11 on defense, and then you throw the 11 on special teams on top of that, 22, and you say, hey, we know what we've got. That's not always the case early on in the process. When you're trying to build, you're developing a team, you're adding pieces, taking pieces away. There's sometimes intentionally, sometimes due to injury. And so, yes, that is the ultimate goal, that you can have that continuity and the chemistry that comes from that continuity. In this case, we haven't had that, but that's what we're driving at, is to find that right combination and then build that continuity and the chemistry that comes from it.
Do you think that's part of the issue with the run game right now, maybe just because it hasn't been the consistency amongst the five that are out there?
It could be. It's not. I don't want to dismiss it that it's not. It's certainly something that it could be a factor. I don't think it's the biggest factor. I think there's, again, pieces that are factoring into that overall puzzle at this point, Sal. That's what we get paid to do. That's what we get paid to do, is to go in and solve those problems and make the adjustments.
Sean, do you think that Nick O'Leary can fill in if Charles is out for an extended period?
I do. I thought Nick did a good job yesterday in the passing game, in particular, and made some key catches for us. He's a guy that Tyrod trusts, obviously, and he's made some big plays this year so far, and I like the direction he's heading right now.
Sean, do you foresee Deion Dawkins continuing his role as the starting left tackle with this team?
No, we're going to continue to evaluate that, and then with respect to Cordy's situation as well. Deion, you know, as you mentioned, we talked about the young players. You know, he's coming and done a really nice job at that left tackle position. He's going up against some good pass rushers on that side of the ball, and you know, he's got some plays that he wants back, and so. You know, we're going to continue to evaluate that moving forward.
Was there, given the fact that all your players stood for the anthem yesterday, was this something that was determined by the leadership council that they were going to do this, or as some owners have ordered their team, the players to stand?
You know, that's really a question for our players. That's you know, our players decided to do that, and just like when they knelt, you know, we stood by them and we support them in the same way. When they stand, we stand by them and support them.
John, what happened on the two big plays that Trey White let up? Were those, you know, was there any scheme breakdown? Was it a simple case of him getting beat?
No, it's, you know, Trey's going to be fine. And I think that's the takeaway from all this, is he's going to be fine. We've got to continue to play with good technique and detail our work. And that's really where it stemmed from more than anything. The great part I love about it, I would add, Matt, if I could, is just how we learned. You know, we got beat early in the game, and to come back and battle a receiver of that quality for the better part of three quarters after that, I thought was impressive. And that's the mental toughness, the makeup of Trey, and that's something we can build on.
It seemed like you guys had him follow him on the field a little bit. Was that part of the plan to kind of, I don't know, a little bit see where he's at and kind of see how he would respond to that challenge?
Well, I think we knew where he was at. That was a key part of the game plan. You know, overall, when you face a receiver like that, Trey, that was also the game plan of having Trey follow him at times, yes. And just to be able to do that, you know, in his rookie year, fifth game in, I think is pretty impressive.
You have more time in the bye week for the next opponent, but do you think maybe more of a benefit from this extra time is self-evaluation and self-scouting? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's huge. As I mentioned earlier, of the self-building self-awareness as to what we're doing well, and there's a lot of things, and what we're not doing well enough, and that our hope or should allow us to grow and evolve into the team that we're trying to become. And that's still a process that's going to take time, but that's important. This will be a big week to put in our work, you know, a lot of it being off the field, but it starts by being humble, being honest with ourselves and saying, hey, you know, what can I do better? What can we do better?
What did you see from Matt Milano in his first start?
I thought he did a good job. You know, the first thing we look at, Matt, is really the look in his eye, and we talked about that. I talked about that with Coach Babbitts, our linebackers coach, and he said he had the right look in his eye on the boundary, and I thought he handled himself well. You know, it wasn't too big for him, and now knowing Matt, he'll continue to improve. He puts a lot of time into his job, and again, another young guy that was out there on the field and did a good job at times for us.
Is there a timetable on Jordan Matthews? Any updated timetable or EJ Gaines for that matter?
Yeah, I would put them both really in the same bucket. They're both there, and just day to day at this point, we'll see. You know, week to week, really, and just evaluate as we go as we move forward each day here.
How about Leonard Johnson, coach, yesterday?
You know, he came out and had the hamstring, and you know, he's day to day really. So hopefully this bye will come at the right time for Leonard.
Clarify, are Matthews and Gaines day to day or week to week?
I'm sorry. It's a week to week with them, but we're going to evaluate them day to day and see how they move on. Yeah.
Do you have like coaching and working with Andy Reid? Do you have like a book of secrets from him on a bye week?
I know his record's pretty impressive coming off the bye. I think he's one loss on his record coming off the bye. So, I've got some. I've taken some notes over the years. Yeah. Thanks.
Head coach Sean McDermott meeting with the media just across the way in the media room, and a couple of big takeaways. Charles Clay is out for multiple weeks, according to the head coach, with that knee scope today after the injury in the first quarter yesterday. McDermott said it's too soon to say whether Charles Clay's season might be over. He said, quote, we haven't gotten that far yet, but he's out multiple weeks. Charles Clay is going to be out multiple weeks. The other injury updates, Leonard Johnson day-to-day with his hamstring. E.J. Gaines, Jordan Matthews day-to-day. Obviously no game at the end of this week, so they can afford to take their time and evaluate that. But losing Charles Clay for multiple weeks on an offense that is starved for playmakers, Donald, that is a pretty significant blow.
That is definitely a significant blow. Now, the good thing that you have is the bye week right now, right? So, you know, you can take off one game because he's going to miss this week, which is not a game per se. Well, it's not a game. So I think torn meniscus or whatever it is, you know, Pro Football Talk has tweeted out it's a torn meniscus. So if that's what he had surgery on today, you know, usually guys can get back from that and be okay. You know, it's going to be pain management for him for the rest of the season. In terms of Tyrod and this offense and moving forward without him, they will need Nick O'Leary to step up. They will need Logan Thomas to step up and make plays. It's going to be a committee thing, and Tyrod has to spread the ball around to these guys. He's going to have to pull the trigger and just throw it to these guys.
They need an answer at wide receiver, and we all look for Zay Jones to emerge yesterday. Didn't really happen. but I think like a third of the targets yesterday, only a third of the targets to wide receivers, most of them to tight ends and backs coming out of the backfield. And that's got to change, I think. That's got to evolve. They need to run the ball better, as Chris Brown said an hour ago. That, no question about that. But they really need to find some kind of an answer at the wide receiver spot. I don't know that there's somebody out on the street that would provide an answer. I don't know that there's a trade that could be made. Maybe there is that could provide somewhat of an answer. But I guess I would look at the current roster, including Zay Jones and Andre Holmes, really, as guys who have to get open, have to show themselves, that have to mostly earn the trust of Tyrod Taylor to pull the trigger and hit him when they're open downfield. Kalen Clay, I'd throw in that category also.
Yeah, I mean, these guys, Brandon Tate too. You know, these guys have to get open. They have to do their best to make plays for Tyrod Taylor. He has to trust that these guys are going to make plays. And he has to get it in his mind that, look, I have to throw these guys open. I have to get them the ball, get them their opportunity so that guys can really get into the flow of the game. You can't go entire games without throwing it to your wide receivers. You know, you can't go entire season. That's not a good thing, you know. And, look, this team for the last couple of years, teams have stacked the box against this team, and they've still been able to run it and have the number one rushing attack. It's not working right now.
Right.
You know, they still need to get that working. The running game has to get working. But in terms of throwing the ball, now you don't have Charles Clay for a couple of weeks, however long it is. You don't have him. So you have to throw it to your wide receivers. Guys, on the outside, you have to get open. And Tyrod, in his mind, you have to pull the trigger and throw it to these guys. Or you won't be able to do anything on offense.
Yeah, and which is pretty much where they were yesterday. And that takes us into the other thing that I took out of McDermott's comments about, and it sounds like he delivered this message to his players today too, about an honest assessment of their situation. And that doesn't mean that it's all gloom and doom, quite frankly, and everybody's feeling bad about the nature of the loss yesterday and the fact that they almost won yesterday. But big picture-wise, 3 wins, 2 losses, about a third of the way into the season. If you take a look at the standings board, they're more than in the hunt, and it's not worth anything a third of the way into the season. But at 3-2, they are right in the playoff mix and on top of the AFC East, given all the tiebreakers that are out there with 3 wins, 2 losses. Kansas City, obviously, number one seed in the AFC right now. The Bills are the number two seed by virtue of tiebreakers conference records and the number one seed in the AFC East. Now, that won't get you anything. That won't get you a cup of latte at Tim Hortons, but if you play it out and continue to play and continue to battle, win the close ones, find answers on offense, then you got a chance. And I'm sure that's part of what the message was from Sean McDermott. And along with that, an honest look at what the standings were, he also said, and this is important too, we've got a lot of room to grow. He said, we got to be honest with ourselves. We got to have self-awareness. We've had a chance to win games in the fourth quarter and won some games in the fourth quarter, which was not taking place the last couple of years. They need to win more of them. But
yeah,
two plays, a couple of plays away in two games, and big problems to solve. But still, the big overall picture is not so bad for this team.
They will have to win. If they want to win, they're going to have to win probably most of their games in the fourth quarter. This is not a team that will blow any team out, you know, unless they just come out and have a crazy day. But with so many injuries, you're not going to just blow teams out. And then your defense is keeping you in games. And so most of your games, you're either going to be up in the fourth quarter by a touchdown or something like that, 3 points, or you're going to be down by a touchdown or 3 points or something like that. And you're going to have to win your games in the fourth quarter. And so you need everybody to be clicking on all cylinders. And that's Tyrod. That's the running game. That's the offensive line. As they asked him, you know, at some point, do you want to do you want to choose who your five are? They're going to have to do that soon here. You need your wide receivers to be clicking. Everybody has to be clicking because it's going to be pressure-packed games in the fourth quarter if they want to win games.
So we want to hear from you. Where do you stand now? Where do the Bills stand after this first 5 games? And what were your takeaways of yesterday's loss in Cincinnati? Phone lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550, or you can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. What did you take out of yesterday's loss in Cincinnati? We've got a recap of some of the big plays from the game. It's time for our Game Rewind, presented by Toshiba, the official copier company of the Buffalo Bills.
Action fake to Mixon. Dalton's going deep. Got A.J. Green wide open. And Green makes the catch at the 40, at the 30 in Buffalo territory, at the 20. 10-5 touchdown, Cincinnati. 77 yards. Snap. Quick pass, A.J. Green. It is picked off. Off his hands, intercepted at the 35-yard line. Micah Hyde. And Hyde gets knocked out of bounds at the Cincinnati 22. Oh, my goodness, he did it again. Third and 10 from the 12. The snap. Taylor looks, fires into the end zone. Got a man caught. Touchdown, Brandon Tate. Touchdown, Buffalo. Andy Dalton takes the shotgun snap, fires down the middle. This one is caught by A.J. Green at the Buffalo 25, and the ball comes out, and it is scooped up by Poyer at the Buffalo 10. Cuts to his right at the 20, down the far sideline at the 35. Poyer on the run, and he finally goes out of bounds at the 47-yard line. Here we go from dead center in the middle of the field, a 38-yard attempt for Steven Hauschka. He is set. The snap is good. Hauschka's kick is on the way, plenty long enough, and it is good. And the tie is broken. First and goal. They'll make it the 5-yard line. The snap. It is Mixon who gets the carry. Mixon bounces it outside. Heads to the end zone. He is in. Touchdown, Cincinnati. And they get the lead back again with 14:55 left to play. Tyrod in the shotgun. Takes the snap. Looks downfield. Steps up. Fires downfield. Looking for Zay Jones. It is picked off. Intercepted by Iloka for the Bengals at the 40. The 5-year starter was there to pick it off and effectively snuffing out Buffalo's chance. With the loss, the Bills dropped to 3-2. The Bengals improved their record to 2-3. Final score today in Cincinnati. The Bengals get by the Bills 20-16.
Game Rewind presented by Toshiba, the official copier company of the Buffalo Bills. John Murphy, Donald Jones here live at One Bills Drive. We're only here until 2 today because of Sabres hockey. Pre-game show starts at 2, face-off at 3, Sabres and Devils. Sabres announcing that Chad Johnson will get the start in goal. A lot going on in sports today, including the NFL. We're going to deal with a lot of that in the next segment. Let's squeeze in one more phone call before we get to that. Let's go to Jim in West Seneca. Hi, Jim. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, I'd have to say, give the defense 100% for all of their effort in the games. And the offense, we've thrown away our running game. We've never had a passing game with Tyrod Taylor. So we've got no place to go unless we can resuscitate that running game.
I agree with you. I know. That's the foundation. That's what they've came into the season kind of leaning on, and it hasn't been there, really, and other than the first game, 190 yards against the Jets. And since then, it hasn't been there, and that is what they're built on. That's where they have to come through, and it hasn't been there.
They have to come through, you know, and it, we always talk about, look, teams are stacking the box, but teams have stacked the box the last 2 years on this team, you know. And so and last year you had the same situation with wide receivers where you had new guys off the streets that you were trying to figure it out. They were still able to run the ball, though, and be the number one rushing attack in the game. You know, week in and week out, we knew, okay, we can run the ball. Passing is an issue. This year, they're not able to get anything going. And so, yeah, this is a bye week. I'm sure these coaches are going to be in here this week trying to figure out this running game and how they get it going.
All right. We've got more to come. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
More of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Snap, quick pass, A.J. Green, it is picked off, off his hands, intercepted at the 35-yard line, Micah Hyde, and Hyde gets knocked out of bounds at the Cincinnati 22. Off the hands of A.J. Green and Micah Hyde. Oh my goodness, he did it again.
Micah Hyde with the Advanced Alarm defensive play of the game. Advanced Alarm providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. Welcome back to the show, John Murphy, Donald Jones.
The safeties.
They're good.
They are playing good together. Yeah, playing good together. Both of them playing good together. It's a great thing to see, this defensive backfield. You know, just the fact that you have Tre'Davious, you know, yesterday, yeah, he gave up some big plays, but he did bounce back. And you know, he for the most part of the game, he did a good job on A.J. Green. A.J. Green is, for me, top three best wide receivers in the game. Yeah. It's going to happen. Like, you can't – these dudes get paid a lot of money for a reason, you know. And so I think Tre'Davious did a good job. On the other side, E.J. Gaines has done a good job. Without him being in, Sharice Wright steps in and has a good game, you know. And so it just shows the depth that they have at corner. And then he moves into nickel and does a good job there. The back end, the safeties, doing great.
You know what I like about Tre'Davious White game yesterday? He had to have that game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He had to get through a game where a premier wide receiver in the league would make a few plays against him, and he made a few plays against him. There's no question about it. On the first one, second possession, first play, I'm not sure what happened to Tre'Davious. It was almost like he was looking for for A.J. Green to make a break to the outside. He kind of leaned that way. He did not make that break. And all of a sudden, once A.J. Green gets a step or a step and a half on you, you're toast. I mean, he's that big and he's that good. On the second one, I almost felt like, looking at the video, I almost felt like Tre'Davious, just for an instant, lost his focus. He turned to the sideline as if to check with the referee, the official on that side. You know, are we onside here? And all of a sudden, snap, Tre'Davious kind of playing catch up, and it was too late. The ball whizzed right by his head, right into the hands of A.J. Green on a slant, and it was a big play, a 44-yarder. But I feel I'm not happy he gave up those plays. They were two critical big plays. But I'm happy, let me put it this way, those plays are behind him. You know what I mean? That had to happen at some point. And no matter how good a corner is, you can't make every play. And I'm happy that those plays are behind him. I really am.
Yeah, I'm happy those plays are behind him. And this is what I expected out of Tre'Davious White. When you watch him in the spring, you knew he was going to be a good corner. Like, he is a good corner. He has his head on. He knows how to obviously speak in the media, which doesn't matter on the field. But all of these things, when you put it all together, you knew he was going to be a good player, right? Now, you think back, you think about the games that they've played thus far. He's had to cover, well, Kearse, who's, you know, a decent receiver, not a star receiver in the first game. But then he had Kelvin Benjamin.
Yep.
He's had Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. He had Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu for the first part of the game. They went down, whatever. He had to stick those guys in the first part of that game. And then yesterday he had to stick A.J. Green. And then the next game is not, it doesn't get any easier. You know, he has Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson, you know. And so he has to go through these ups and downs that all rookies have to go through facing the best wide receivers in the game. And he's actually holding his own, you know. And I saw something last week where I think it was NFL Network had him ranked like the 15th best rookie in the league right now. You know, he is playing very good right now. I'm impressed with how he might give up a play, even in the Denver game. He had a rough first half. He bounces back in the second half. Yeah. Yesterday, he has some plays that were rough for cornerbacks, and he bounces back and has a good game. You know, it just shows the mental toughness that he has, that he can just move on from things, and I think that's something that Bills fans should be happy about. This, you don't have a corner here, a rookie at that, that will actually go into the tank if he's having a bad quarter, a bad half or something like that. He bounces back and makes plays.
Not happy that the plays were made, but
right.
I feel like that's behind him now.
Mm-hmm.
And he responds well. He made plays as yesterday went along.
I mean, you talked about the one play where he looked to the sideline. He won't ever do that again. You know, it's like you're a rookie in this thing, and you're going through all of these things at once, and these learning experiences all at once, right? And you get up there, and you lose focus for a second. You look to the sideline. And next thing you know, A.J. Green is by you already. And it's like, I won't ever let that happen again. You learn from things like that. He has his head on right, like I said. And so you know he'll learn from something like that and never do it again.
It has been an eventful couple of days in the National Football League, Donald. There's no question about that with a lot of news out there. And let's talk about some of it. Word today that Texans defensive end J.J. Watt is out the rest of the season. Broke his leg. He fractured the tibial plateau in his left leg during Houston's first defensive series against Kansas City last night. Kansas City won that game 42-34. It was an odd injury. It wasn't really contact. It's sort of like his left leg locked up. And he left, obviously, he had an x-ray, left on crutches, went to an ambulance. Very tough to see. You know, he's meant so much to the Texans, obviously, so much to the city of Houston, and really so much to the NFL, one of the top two or three stars in the game. And J.J. Watt leaving as he did, clearly disturbed after in yesterday's game with now his season is over, three-time NFL Defensive Player of the Year. He had a tweet message out today, J.J. Watt. He said, "I can't sugarcoat it. I am devastated. All I want to do is be out there on that field for my teammates in this city. I am sorry." That's what J.J. Watt had to say. That's a tough one because he is one of the marquee players in the NFL.
Yeah, it's tough. J.J. Watt is one of the marquee players, one of the ambassadors for the NFL, you know, and to see him go down with something like this, knowing he's dealt with so much over the past couple of years, it's tough because you want the stars to play. You know, you want to see the stars play. So it's tough for him. It's tough for, you know, obviously his family and their fans. Hopefully they can move past this.
Terrible night for the Texans because earlier in the game they lost Whitney Mercilus. And late last night the Texans learned that Mercilus will miss the rest of the season with a torn pectoral muscle. You could see early in the game how he started tapping at his left shoulder as if to say there's something going on here. Torn Peck, he is out for the rest of the year. Arguably, two best defensive players on that roster and two of the better defensive players in the league. That's very brutal.
Yeah,
tough.
That's brutal. And something like this, because we've actually had people call us and tweet us and talk about the injuries for the Bills and how come the Bills always have so many injuries? Well, now you can see injuries, and you're going to go over some more injuries that happen all throughout the league. Big, big names, guys that are going down. This stuff happens to every team. You know, it's not just the Bills. Every team has to deal with injuries and move past them. Right now the Bills are, and the Houston Texans are as well.
It was just tough, though, to see the names. Odell Beckham, broken ankle in yesterday's game. He'll undergo an MRI to see if there's any ligament damage. I think he's going to go on IR. I don't know if they've officially said that he's out for the year. That could happen, though. He's probably going to be out for at least 8 weeks, which would take you deep into the season. But Odell Beckham, with 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter, landing awkwardly as he tried to catch a pass, that was difficult to see.
Yeah, that probably was the one injury that is like, oh, my. Like, the way that thing happened, it looked nasty. You could see his pain in his eyes as he cried and everything, and it's tough for them. They're having such a tough season. Odell has gone through so many ups and downs over the last couple of years, and to see something like this for him, that is tough, and for that offense is tough, you know. And he is another one of the marquee, you know, talents and stars in the game, and he's going to be down. They haven't said he's out for the season yet, I would think so, but if he comes back from surgery and from that injury yesterday, how bad that looked, I would be shocked.
You hope what?
I said if he comes back, I would be shocked.
Yeah. I know he's hurt. I know he's in a lot of pain. Are you okay with crying like that? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's
pain. Because you know why? It's not the pain that makes you cry. What it is you don't know if you're ever going to be the same again.
Right.
And that's what you were. That's the first thought in your mind. Like, I don't know if I'll ever be the same again. Because you know, I'm sure he heard something pop or something like that. And you're like, what was that? You don't know what it is, you know. And so, will I ever be the same again? That's what he's thinking right now.
This goes into the bizarre category. This came up first thing this morning. Crazy story from Miami. Offensive line coach Chris Forster has resigned after a video surfaced on social media of him snorting a white powder. He said in a statement he will seek professional help. He says he's trying to get the help he needs with the support of his family and medical professionals. Forster, in his second stint with the Dolphins, second season with the team, Dolphins released a statement, said Chris is no longer with the organization. We'll try to get him the help he needs. He turns 56 years old on Thursday. One of the highest paid assistant coaches in the NFL, making between $2.5 and $3 million per year. Chris Forster resigned after the video came out showing him snorting white powder. Just crazy. Just bizarre.
Yeah, that's crazy. You know, and there's – you obviously he needs help. I hope the best for him. I hope that he goes and seeks and gets the help that he needs. And it's a bad thing for that organization, you know, and for something like that to come out on social media where you have so many kids watching and things like that, it's you can't do
terrible.
That. You can't have that.
And the Dolphins, and I have very little sympathy for Miami Dolphins, but if you look at the way their season has started, the first third of their season with the hurricane and missing the opener and then spending a week out west and then having to come east and going to London, getting smacked around in London, and now this, just brutal, which goes to the point.
And their quarterback.
Yep, losing their quarterback. Anybody who sits there in April, May, June, July, or August and says, this team's going to do this team's going to do that, it's a fool's errand. It's foolish. Who could ever foresee the offensive line coach having to resign because of that? Who could ever foresee a hurricane that would put them on the road for the first month of the season? And that's just the Dolphins, one of 32. Every team has crazy things that happen that you have no idea how it's going to go. Anybody who bets on pro football, I think, is a fool. But seriously, I have no idea how things are going to play out. And no idea. Somebody who sits here today and said, well, now after yesterday, I think the Bills can win 9, 10, 11 – you don't know. You don't know who they're going to play, what they're going to be up against. What are the Dolphins going to look like now, you know?
In pro football especially, over the rest of the sports, just because you have 53 guys that have to actually come together and play, you know, and every week. And then you have other things that happen off the field. You have weather and stuff like that that can change games. You know, it's if you're betting on it, oof, it's rough.
It's crazy. One more thing about yesterday. Ben Roethlisberger, 5 interceptions in Pittsburgh's loss to the Jacksonville's. His worst day as a Steeler. Steelers lost 30-9, and Roethlisberger, after the game, I don't know if he was looking for pity or what, but
He shouldn't have said what he said.
You don't think?
No, you don't. I mean, look, it's. I don't know if he was joking. You don't joke like that after you just got blasted by Jacksonville. You threw five interceptions, and you're making jokes about it.
I don't think it was a joke.
I mean, I hope it wasn't a joke. I mean, look, I've already said I think he's done.
Maybe I don't have it anymore.
Yeah, that's what he said. Maybe I don't have it anymore. I've already said I think he's done. Mentally, in his mind, he thinks he's done. You know, and you start to talk about retirement so much, then it's like, all right, you know, maybe I got it one more year. I can see the talent. And then you start to go through the season, and something like this happens in the game yesterday, and he's like, this is why I'm already thinking about retiring. Maybe I don't have it anymore.
I recall something similar with the Hall of Famer Jim Kelly here when a rough game later on in his career, and he didn't say maybe I don't have it anymore, but just expressed doubts about, you know, where his game was at. I interpreted that then and this now as just bitter disappointment about the way the game went. He threw five interceptions, Roethlisberger did. Five picks. Sure, he's disappointed. Sure, self-doubt would have to creep in. But I also think there's an element of sarcasm, and it seemed to me when I saw the Roethlisberger quote, it seemed to me like he was kind of trying to get the jump on the people who were going to write that anyway.
you know
what I mean? Like, let me say it before you do.
Yeah, I'm going to make jokes about myself so that you can't.
Yeah, I don't
joke
think he was
kidding. On me.
Certainly wasn't happy about it, that's for sure. Let's see if we can work in a call or two. Let's go to Bob in Kenmore. Hello, Bob. Welcome. You're on the air with us. Go ahead.
Donald, you mentioned before about maybe injuries and everybody, and it is creeping up with the Bills again. I mean, Matthews can't stay on the field. But I was wondering if you guys should talk about Cordy Glenn, our left tackle, a franchise player. The Watkins trade, we'll see. But the money we're paying him, we could have paid Watkins, and he is never available. And if he could play, maybe Dawkins is playing right tackle, maybe, and that's our blind side. Are you sensing any frustration that his lack of availability is becoming some type of concern with the Bills? Because he is never available for the money we're paying him.
Who are you asking, me or Donald?
Both of you.
I'm sensing that frustration, absolutely. I know they're frustrated about Cordy Glenn not being on the field and frustrated with, you know, the fact that he's been injured. Absolutely they are. There's no question about that.
Yeah, look, the money is one thing. And look, money is a huge thing. You're paying him a lot of money, and he's not available for you. You think about that. But it's also just the talent, you know. And you know how talented he is. You've seen him on film from the previous years and all of that stuff. This coaching staff – and for him to never be available, it's like, man, this is rough. But, hey, that's why they traded up to get Deion Dawkins, you know. And now he's being thrown into the fire, and he's going to have his ups and downs as he learns the game.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're only here till 2 today because of Sabres hockey. Come on back, though, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones. Just a couple of minutes left. We're going to move aside for a hockey pregame show at 2 and face-off at 3, the Sabres and the New Jersey Devils with a holiday matinee at the KeyBank Center. This is also news that came up during the course of the show today. The name Y.A. Tittle mean anything to you, Donald? Pro Football Hall of Fame quarterback Y.A. Tittle.
Oh, he died today.
Passed away today at the age of 90. Played for the Colts 1948, 1950 in the old All-America Football Conference. Then went to the 49ers, played from 1951 through 1960. Of course, capped his career with the Giants, inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame 1971. Seven Pro Bowls over 17 years. Y.A. Tittle, age 90, passed away today. Let's see. We got a couple of minutes left here in the show. Again, we're going to move aside for Sabres hockey. Let's see if we can work in a call, though. Nancy calling from West Seneca. Hello, Nancy. You're on the air with us.
Hello there. I just finished reading that nice article about Stephen Hauschka in yesterday's paper.
I didn't read it.
I was surprised that there was no mention of Steve's Buffalo connection. You know, so many people have Buffalo connections. Well, his grandfather, his name was Dr. Ted Hauschka. And he was a scientist at Roswell Park. He was the head of the department there, because I worked for Dr. Ted Hauschka Watson from about 58 to 64 when I left having my second child.
Huh.
I didn't go back to work again. But Dr. Hauschka had two sons. There was Stephen and Peter. And I think Peter is the one who's Steve Hauschka's father.
Really?
So how about that?
How about that? I didn't know that. I'll ask Stephen Hauschka when I see him.
I'm surprised we never We never learned that about him.
I know. Somebody you think would have come up with that before. Very interesting. Well, Donald, we're going to break off early here for Sabres hockey, but a good show coming up tomorrow. Steve Tasker will join us tomorrow. We'll talk with Trey Wingo tomorrow from ESPN. Of course, all that NFL news we can talk to Trey Wingo about. And I feel like we've got a little bit more to dig into on this Bills loss yesterday. I know a lot of fans have more to say, and I feel like I have more to say, too.
You have more to say?
I do have more to say. 2 hours today was just not
enough. So are you upset that they're shorting us an hour?
No, because I know because we've got 2 weeks until the next game, too. In other words, we're going to have to drag out the Bengals' loss a little bit over the next few days.
Yeah. We can get us some more lattes up here.
Yeah. And
we can talk some more. We're going to need some lattes. It's a bye week. This is why I don't like losses before bye weeks.
Oh,
it's
terrible.
It's extra long for us to talk about until the next game.
Yep, and we're back tomorrow at 12 noon with Steve Tasker. He'll join us tomorrow. Trey Wingo from ESPN will join us tomorrow. Make sure you join us as well. The news here from One Bills Drive today, Charles Clay out for multiple weeks, according to head coach Sean McDermott. Too soon to say whether his season is over. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistance today from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Colton, and Thomas Homander. Olivia Merrill, our producer, is Jay Harris. Stay tuned. Hockey pregame coming up. We're back at 12 noon tomorrow with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.